Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 40. What if you came out to your wife at age 37?
I was teaching a Hawaiian history course at the Bailey House Museum in Iao Valley in Wailuku on Maui. And this old woman was there, one of the elders. She said to me at the end of the class, you're going to marry my granddaughter. And I looked at her and I says, I don't even know who you are, let alone don't even know who your granddaughter is. And she says, no, you're going to marry my granddaughter. That was a Friday. It was Thanksgiving weekend of 1997. And that Sunday, I walked into church. When I looked above at the stage, I heard this angelic voice and I says, wow, how beautiful. That's going to be my wife. And I've never met that woman on the stage. And I said, that was going to be my wife. The family have been grooming me in the ministry and wanting me to be a preacher man. I did the prayer work and I didn't know that God had touched that girl as well. And when I did the prayer, she had turned to her grandmother and said, that's going to be my husband. And this was said to me later by the grandmother. My papa and my grandaunt introduced us. And then a week later, she invited me to her family home where that grandmother that attended my class was present. And when I walked in, that grandmother said, I told you you're going to marry my granddaughter. Many families back home believe, you know, nothing is a coincidence. We as a people are highly spiritual already. Previous to the missionaries coming in 1820, we believed, our people, until today, many of our people still believe and still practice and worship the 400,000 gods and goddesses. Pele, the goddess of fire, Laka, the goddess of the forest, of the hula, of the implement, Kane, the god of procreation and of the bamboo. The faith that I believe runs so parallel with from Hawaiian with Christianity is that we believe in Jesus Christ and that Jesus Christ will protect us, will guide us. No harm can come unto us. And that's the same concept as Hawaiians we've taken, where we walk on the land, if we pray to the gods of that land, they will allow us safe passage. I came from a very conservative family, my father being Greek Cypriot, my mother being Hawaiian Portuguese, both of them Greek Orthodox and Roman Catholic. You don't speak about your family life to anyone. You sit down at dinner and you pray. You dress a certain way. I, till today, have a hard time leaving the home without wearing a collared shirt. I remember the first night I asked my mother if I may go camping in the backyard with all my neighborhood friends. And she said yes. And I remember taking all my things out. I set up the canvas and all the neighborhood kids came. They used my mom's yard, and actually it was the front of the house that we camped in. One boy about my age and another boy a little older than me were playing around sexually, doing, you know, touching, and I tried to ignore it, and then they both got on top of me. And they began doing their thing, and I just went with the flow, and it was weird, it was uncomfortable. But I remember coming for the first time, and I cried. I got scared. I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what that was. And I didn't know that at that point, someone was taking my innocence away. I just laid there when they started fondling me. I just froze. I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to do. What is going on? And both of them had their mouths by my cock. And as soon as I came, I quickly pulled my pants up and I ran into the house. And my mother was laying on the sofa. It was dark. She was sleeping on the sofa. She decided to rest there. And I laid along the couch on the floor, just sort of stiff, and just tears running down my face and trying not to make any sound. And my mother woke up and noticed I was there, and she said, "Son, are you okay?" And I says, "Yes, Mom, I'm okay." And then she says, "Did anybody hurt you? Why are you in the house? I thought you're camping." I says, "No, Mom, I'm okay. I'm tired. I'm going to sleep." I didn't enjoy it the first day. I think that it wasn't until the next day I was thinking about that feeling that actually, it was like some kind of chemical thing in my mind. I don't know how to explain it, but when you're coming, you have that mind. It's just like something in your mind, in your brain, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know. But it was weird. It was the first time, and I thought I was supposed to have sex with a girl. Now looking back, it was such a complex situation and such a corrupt neighborhood that I felt I lived in. And after a while, I enjoyed coming. I just enjoyed coming. And I just let them do whatever they wanted to do. And since that day, for what would have been up to my senior year, that happened all the time. And after a while, I just let it happen because I just thought it was okay. I just thought, well, if that neighbor did it, who I was supposed to trust, and partnered with the neighbor across the street, which did it, I'm supposed to trust, who is a running back on a football team that I should be protected by because he's supposed to take care of me like a brother, catches me in the corner and doesn't tell anybody that he's found me and starts fondling me and then makes me suck his cock. And then thought, okay, I didn't say anything to anybody, so he's going to let me do it for the next 3 years. Today, those individuals have wives and they have children, and I'm still struggling with a lot of this. And so I had to continue to pretend while the men in my neighborhood went around knowing exactly what they've done. Nobody's going to believe me. They're going to think I just want attention. They're going to think I'm making up stories. I don't know. I just felt nobody's going to believe me. I never played sports because all the kids in the neighborhood called me a faggot, a queer. So I dealt with that. I dealt with my own siblings saying, "You faggot, you queer, you're good for nothing." So where did I find my solitude? I had the picture of Jesus in my room. It was during my walk as a Christian Hawaiian being groomed in the culture, because I've been groomed by my elders to be a genealogist for our people, to document and trace their lands, to go to court and speak on their behalf, and then at the same time conduct Bible studies, hold prayer nights, oversee as the superintendent of Sunday schools for both the children's church and the adult church, upholding all of that rigid, what I know today, a colonized way. Man finds some most interesting ways to suppress others. If you have enough people in your community that you're raised in that are called the leaders of those organizations, you're going to just grow up believing that is the only way. And then you're going to suppress all of those feelings you have inside that's going on. And you're going to wonder why their sons or why they themselves took you as you're entering seventh grade, where you're supposed to be generously entering teenage years and addressing sports and addressing girls and or boys for that matter, but you couldn't because they were too busy taking you in a back room and sleeping with you. I remember going and lighting the candle every night, crying and asking Jesus, "Help me. Why? Why Are these people being so mean to me? What have I done wrong? Over time, a couple of them approached me at separate times asking for forgiveness. And being a good Christian man, I forgave them. I shook their hand and I says, God forgives you. I forgive you. And as they continue to talk, I says, oh, but that doesn't mean we'll ever speak again. And I continued forward with my life, never seen or saw any of them again, except for one whom I confronted him just about 2 years ago. And I said, you hurt me and you took away some things from me. I said, but I want to let you know I forgive you and that I love you. And that's been the story of my life, forgiving people and just hoping to be accepted. All of what I was going through just grew me to keep all of that suppressed, those new feelings of loving men, of wanting to be in a man's arm, because I still had to provide that myth to my parents and to my church family, that I am going to marry a woman and have children. She's going to take them to soccer practice. And she's going to have a meatloaf and mashed potatoes and some green beans ready for me at dinner every single night. I was married in 1999. And I cried at my wedding. I have to say for sure and for certain, I was so in love with my ex-wife. I was so in love with my ex-wife. And even till today, one of my favorite parts of a woman's body is her breasts. And I loved my ex-wife's breasts. She and I had great sex, but there was always an emptiness inside of me. I love being in a man's arms. It's just, I can't explain it. It feels good. In looking at my challenges and my nightmares I was getting and my depression I was going into, because I was trying to be that son who has a girlfriend, I just felt that it wasn't the time. I wish I wasn't afraid, but I was. I was afraid because I thought maybe I'd get arrested for being gay. I thought somebody's going to kill me if I'm gay. I knew a man, he was younger than I. He was burned at the beach park. I did have a one-night stand. Yes, I did. And I was scared. And I was so scared that I thought God was going to tell her. So I better tell her first. So I did. I don't know what went on in my wife's mind. She looked at it as a mistake. She looked at it as God forgives you. You need to say these prayers and God will forgive you and not look back. And that's how I took it. She, at 15, was diagnosed with a hemangioma. I think that's how you pronounce it. And it's a tumor in the, I guess it's in the cranial area. And it just grew to a certain size and she went partially blind. Over the many years, she lost her vision. And then came a time where my ex-wife became completely blind. So she couldn't tell anything. She couldn't see I was looking at porn, gay porn. I looked at gay porn all the time. All the time. Gay porn was up in my computer all the time. She started to have, in 2008, these seizure-like symptoms. And so I went from a husband to more of a caretaker or caregiver. And then I called upon relatives to come and help me. Within a year before my coming out, I really said to myself, I am gay. But I didn't know how to work it out and just confront a woman after being with her since 1997, married her since 1999. And here we fast forward to 2010, and I'm going to break this woman's heart. I love her. I can't believe I'm going to do this to her, but I got to, because in all my selfishness, I have to be real with myself. I remember being at my favorite beach with my ex-wife in the water, enjoying my birthday. And I remember just being so irritated with her. And I grabbed her arm and I told her, get out of my face. I made her believe that she wanted to go and visit with my parents, because she would always say, I miss being with your mom and dad. I want to see your mom and dad. So that was the big excuse. That was the big reason why she was going. It gets really complex. So she believed that I was sending her to see my mom and my dad. And she says, I'll see you in 3 days. And I said, sure. The next morning, 6:30 in the morning, I woke up. I looked at my ex-wife, then my wife. It was March 24th, the day after my birthday. And I remember crying and just saying, please forgive me what I'm about to do today. And I put her on the plane. And then for the past 7 months, for the 7 months after that, I just drank myself into the ground, just kept drinking and drinking. And people were wondering where I was. And it took a beautiful family to come looking for me. And they found me at my apartment, face down on the floor, just out. They picked me up, put me in the shower, helped me to pack all my things. And they took me, and for a whole year, they helped me. That year, 2010, my father called and said to me, what is going on? You need to come and get your wife. I remember picking them up. My mother was angry with me. My mother was so angry because people are starting to talk about my marriage. Because they were all angry with me. My sisters, everyone was angry with me. Took them upstairs and I just said, Mom, I can't do this anymore. We need to talk now. I got to get this off of my chest now. I says, could we please sit down? And as I was sharing with my ex-wife and my mother, of course, I started crying. My mother started crying. My ex-wife started getting angry, pounding the table, just saying names. My mother struggling between hearing her son say that he's gay to telling my wife, my son is not Satan. My son is not the devil. Why are you doing this, son? Who's manipulating you? Who's new in your life that's caused this? Repacked all their things up, said to me, take us to the airport now. It took my mother several months to finally call me and say, you're my son. She said, I love you. I don't understand. I don't know where to even begin to understand. Your father doesn't want to know. We haven't told him. He just said, I don't want to know. I might not, how did he say? He said he might not love me anymore. And I remember my mother's birthday. They were celebrating in Las Vegas, my father and my mother. And my father said, I'm ready to know what's going on with my son. And they were at the dinner table for my mother's birthday. My father found out and he says, well, you tell my son when he's done being confused to come home and get his wife. Fast forward all the way till present day, 2013, we're at his brother's funeral. Marriage equality is being pushed in Hawaii over the past couple of weeks. I've been most open. So I was promoting marriage equality all over my Facebook page. People were shocked. My father said to me, son, I'm all for marriage equality. And I kind of looked at him and I says, where are we going with this, dad? And he said, don't worry about what they think of you. And I said, well, you know that I live a different lifestyle, dad, than most of your family. He says, I don't care. I'm all for marriage equality. And I looked at him and I was like, okay, just leave it there. Don't have any more discussion with him because it'll become awkward. And I think he realizes life is too short. That's the only thing I can come up with and why he's so accepting and open. Because a few years ago, I'm damned to hell. I remember after 1 year, after I left my wife and I came out to her and my family, looking in the mirror and saying, I said, there you are. And I told myself, there you are. And I called myself by name. So I walked out and I said to the family that I was living with, I'm moving to California. What? I said, I'm moving to California. What's in California? My new life. I said, I'm going to San Francisco. I'm going to go and live my life. And I remember packing 2 luggage filled with clothes and taking a blanket and a pillow, put everything else on the barge to Honolulu, came to California with those 2 luggages, a blanket and a pillow. And I didn't even have a job. I cashed out my retirement from the government because I worked for the government. I had a bunch of other things saved up, took all of that, didn't look back. My friend that lives here in Oakland, she said to our friend in Kona, let's bring him to San Francisco. Let's introduce him to San Francisco. These two women were going to introduce me to the Castro District. And I remember it was such a huge thing for me. But nobody knew me. Nobody cared. And that's what made it so good. That's what made it great for me. And that's where I held a man's hand for the first time in public, walking on the street, passing people who didn't stare at me and think I was weird and strange. And it felt really good. Coming to where I'm at now in my life should have happened a long time ago. There was a lot of anger, and I still have some bitterness towards coming out as a gay man at a late age. The old tradition Christian leaders groomed our minds to believe in evil. I have begun the process for some years of decolonizing the mind, but I have a long way to go. Like one of my relatives said, you have your own ticket to heaven. It's how you make it. And I know for sure and for certain that the God in whom I believe in will not damn me to the lake of sulfur. I really, truly believe that. And I don't have to convince myself anymore.